Welcome to Health Tips, episode number 28 by Atharva Web Radio. Welcome to Health Tips, real people who look good and feel great. The show is about people and how they manage to fit in fitness. Time or place. Too often we hear those too busy, no time excuses. Now see how these super successful folks manage to fit in fitness. And apart from fitness, Health Tips begins to expand with recipes, ideas and more. This time it's another bonus with three guests. First up, Dr. Jagdish Rohira, Bangalore's and probably one of the country's best dentists.
Our practice is geared primarily to deal with what we call as dentophobics, and there are millions of dentophobics out there. Our office motto is we cater to cowards.
Dr. Rohira has had a dental practice in New York with a satellite office in Rochester for 16 years before moving to India's IT capital, Bangalore. Patients come to him from 50 countries around the world, including the US, the UK, Pakistan, Indonesia, Sri Lanka, Holland, France, China, Japan, Switzerland, Australia, Middle East, and different parts of Africa. Next up, Ahmed Sharif, a comedian with a rather satirical view on fitness. Ahmed is known well on the Mumbai and Bangalore circuit.
Ladies, please do come to our pubs, have no fear. The guys here won't slip a roofie in your drink. Not because they don't want to, it's because we have 11 o'clock deadline and the police will close the place down before the guy even has a chance to do it. Because you see, that is the job of the police. Terrorists can wait. Sending white collar workers to bed early is more important. And ladies, you can easily outrun a Bangalore man. Because over here in Pub City, interest in sports means watching IPL in a pub over a pitcher of beer and deep fried snacks. And I don't know whether you have noticed this, if you walked into KFC, they have this notice board put up that says, "This store is under camera surveillance." Relax, people, it's just a restaurant, not a Swiss bank. You really think people would walk in there with assault rifles and bulletproof vests, risk life and limb just to steal some fatty chicken? Besides, there's an easier way to kill yourself at KFC. Eat the chicken.
Now that's serious stuff. I happened to visit the Jindal Nature Cure Hospital outside Bangalore recently, and I was quite amazed to see the kind of things you can do with Nature Cure. Jindal Nature Cure Center is not a spa, but they don't admit you just for weight loss, which I thought was a bit unfair. But you have to agree that there are many more pressing problems in the world, like diabetes and even cancer, for which they have had success in. I got a chance to speak to Mr. Garg, Executive Director of Jindal Aluminium Limited.
The institute provides treatment only by way of Nature Cure, and it's pure Nature Cure. We do not follow here even Ayurveda or Unani or any other form of any other therapy. But the diagnosis is done by the all most modern way, like endoscopy, X-ray, blood test, urine test. All type of tests are done here, and the latest equipments are available for the diagnosis. But treatments are strictly based on Nature Cure, yoga, physiotherapy, acupuncture, and diet control.
And the administrative head of the Jindal Nature Cure Clinic, Dr. Babina.
So naturopathy treatments are there from time immemorial, from the Vedic times itself. But in Jindal, what we have done is we have modified and upgraded all the types of treatments. So first I will explain to you.
But first up, Dr. Jagdish Rohira tells us what makes for healthy teeth. What I thought is that we could talk a little bit about dental care and caring for your teeth, because you're probably never going to get another set of them. So tell us to start with, I know you are one of the best dentists, but for the rest of the people around the world, how do you choose a good dentist?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me over, Karmi. Well, choosing a good dentist, most people will choose a dentist based on proximity, and that is not the right way to choose a dentist, or even on cost factor that he's a cheap dentist. The right way to choose a dentist is, number one, ask your friends who can refer you to a good dentist. Do a cross-reference. Go and see this dentist. See if you feel comfortable with him. Examine the facility in terms of sterility, promptness, courteous service. Listen to what he has to say. Don't take his word for it. Then go ahead and take a second opinion. That would certainly give you some guidelines as to which way you should proceed.
Okay. What are the major things that you've seen, in terms of dentistry problems that could be avoided?
Well, first of all, the basic reason why patients don't go to a dentist is fear. Now, they get scared of a lot of things. Number one being the fear of pain, the fear of a needle, and definitely the fear of the cost factor. So, our practice is geared primarily to deal with what we call as dentophobics, and there are millions of dentophobics out there. Our office motto is, we cater to cowards. The simple thing, if they were to come and see you when they had a simple sensitive problem that could probably be a minor filling, can escalate into a full-fledged root canal requiring a post and a crown, and the cost would be more than quadruple. So the proper thing to do is to come and see a dentist regularly, but people are scared. So, moment when they walk into the office, I try and gauge and understand by shaking their hand. And a handshake can tell me a lot of things. If the hand is clammy, I know he's scared. If it's a limp hand, I know the person's scared. Or if the patient is pacing up and down in the waiting room, you get a feeling that he just wants to run out of the office. When they sit in the chair, they sort of move away. They tend to shake their legs, cross their legs, fold their hands. You can see they're not rested. We always start off by talking to them and understanding what is it that they're afraid of, and try not to make the same mistakes. These are what we call as hard buttons. Well, the answers you get is, I don't like the dentist because he was too rushed, or he didn't use enough anesthesia, or he was distracted by the television and the ticker tape, or he kept answering his mobile phone. So we don't do those kind of things. Even simple words like, we don't use the word injection, or needle, or I'm going to shoot you up. We switch over to things like, I'm going to give you some anesthesia. We don't shoot people. we give them anesthesia.
Right.
We don't use the word pain. We use discomfort. We don't use needle. We use anesthesia. These are the, change of words and make the patient feel very, very comfortable when they are, dealing with us at the practice.
Right. So how do you, find, you've worked with patients in India, you've worked with patients internationally in the US, you were a practicing doctor. How do you find the difference in patients between India and the US, and the difference in doctors between India and the US?
Well, the basic difference between American patients that I practiced in the New York area for 16 years and Indian patients is the fact that the American patient is far more well-educated and knowledgeable about his teeth and wanting to take care of them. While most of the Indian patients are knowledgeable, but they don't give their teeth the proper care that they deserve. And we have to remind them to come back for recalls, while an American patient, traditionally will show up every 6 months to get his or her teeth checked. In India, it's an issue where we try to call them up and they get sometimes frustrated with us. Why are you bothering me? I don't have any problems. I will call you when I have a problem. So that's the basic difference between, patients in America and patients in India. Doctor-wise, by far, the technology in America is really very superior. Doctors are very well trained because their staff is very well trained, and they have to take continuing education courses of up to 60 credit hours per 3 years in the New York area. We don't have that kind of system in India. When you are being introduced to 4,000 new products in dentistry every year, it is imperative that you keep up with them and understand what the products are.
So how has the technology in dentistry changed over your around 30 years? You must have been practicing dentistry for around 30
years. Close to 35 years.
35 years.
I remember when I was in dental school, we used to have an electric motor to cut cavities, graduated to an air rotor. Today we cut teeth with lasers, it has changed a lot. Implants were never done. Root canals were not that common 30 years ago. You had the toothache, you had to take the tooth out. If you had a missing tooth, you went for a bridge or for a denture. Today, we can restore any mouth with fixed prosthesis over a period of time. It's definitely possible to do it on just about every patient.
Okay, and what are the other technologies that have changed dentistry?
Well, ceramics is a big thing, and composites, in my opinion, are the best invention that ever happened to dentistry. Changing a person's smile in less than, you know, half hour per tooth can be very, very rewarding. It's a very aesthetic and artistic job. Bleaching teeth, that's another, you know, good option that we have. And crowns that have now come into the market, these full ceramic crowns like Lava and Impress, are beautiful with fantastic aesthetics that you can get from
tell
them.
Me more about for a non you know, give a little introduction to dentistry technology to our listeners who probably don't understand you know, the differences.
Well, at first when we used to do crowns, crowns were probably stainless steel, you know.
What is a crown first?
A crown is a cap.
Right.
You know, when you have a situation where you have a broken down tooth or when a tooth has had a root canal, you have to prepare the tooth. We don't say cut the tooth, we say prepare the tooth and reduce about a millimeter of tooth structure from all sides, including the biting surface, to compensate for the thickness of the crown. We started off with metal crowns 20, 30 years ago, gradually got into metal to ceramics. That were beautiful restorations. Then again, metal to ceramics, there were different kinds. You had them in non-precious metal. Then you had metals that contained nickel, which were then dumped because they were carcinogenic. Then you had ceramic to semi-precious metals. And then you had the ultimate restoration was ceramic to gold, which was very, very compatible with the tissues. Gradually, that also faded into the background. And now we are focusing primarily on metal-free ceramics. And in those, we have Empress and Lava, which are leading the table. And people are very, very happy. They're a little more expensive, but aesthetically, you cannot match them. They're beautiful.
Okay. So what are the other, you were talking about lasers and the other technologies that are coming into...
Well, lasers are primarily used nowadays to remove soft decay in children. The technology is not really new, but it's very, very expensive to have in your practice. You know, in a city like, country like India, there are some dentists who are using it, but it's very expensive. But it's primarily used to remove soft decay. It cannot be used to prepare a crown, etc., etc. But just to, you know, excavate soft decay, people use lasers.
Right. So you did mention something about you know, the costs between India and any you know, European or American dentistry, and you mentioned that some people are considering coming to India for the treatment. Tell me something about it, you know, in terms of, is it a good idea? What are the positives, the negatives in doing this? You said that the technology is different, but does it really make a difference? And how have you had any experience of people coming to you from out of the country just to get this done?
Well, I have patients that come from 40 different countries at last count. Dentistry is a lot less cheap in this country versus something like in America. I'll give you a classic example. If you were to go for a root canal, post and a crown in the New York City area, you're looking at about $1,000 for the root canal, maybe $400 for the post, and $1,200 for the crown. And I'm talking about metal ceramic, because, you know, pure ceramic crown would cost you close to $1,500, like a Lava and an Empress. You're looking at close to $3,000. You have the same procedure done in India, is going to cost you anywhere between 20 and 25,000 rupees. That's less than $500. Now, we're talking about one teeth. Imagine a patient having multiple areas like this and needing bridge work and replacement. It is definitely very affordable to fly down to India, have a nice holiday, live in a good hotel, and 2 weeks everything is done and you can fly back and still save yourself a lot of money.
Brilliant. And with that, we take a short commercial break.
This is Kofi Gulan.
This is NJ Azoya.
Hi, I'm Kailash
Chandra. This is Tara McAlphy.
This is Meher Castellino.
This is Saeva Joe.
And you're listening to Atharva.
Tarva.
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 Web radio. Chumi.
Brought to you by Atharva Life Sciences Consulting, India's leading life sciences consulting firm. Health Tips is available for a free download online or on iTunes. Just look for Health in the podcast section. And we just became number one in the world. So here's a shout out to thousands of you wonderful folks. Tell us what you like and don't. Just write to thandarust@gmail.com. And we're back with Dr. Jagdish Rohira. So I think think a lot of people would be probably looking to you and to India to for the dental issues in the near future. So tell me, what are some good dental practices? You know, people come to you probably when things go wrong, but how could they keep it from going wrong?
Well, most of them, you know, find me out through word of mouth and via the internet. They send the inquiries on the internet, I'm having this problem. I request them something called an OPG x-ray from them. They scan the x-ray, send it to me. I review the x-ray, give them an entire treatment plan, tell them this is how long it's going to take, this is how much it's going to cost. And I have a website, they check out the work I've done. They're happy with what they see and hear, they make an appointment to come and see me.
Okay, so a patient who, like, you know, a regular person who wants to keep his teeth healthy, what are the tips that you would give him as a dentist?
My tip is 6 month checkup. Every 6 months he's got to come, brush twice a day, floss your teeth. The patient once asked me, do I have to floss every tooth? And I said, only the ones you have to keep.
Right.
And avoid smoking, candy. You know, the sugared diet, sugar drinks are pretty bad for you. Sugarless chewing gum is pretty okay with me. And basically come 6 months for a checkup. And if you notice any sensitivity or anything out of the ordinary, please give the dentist a call and then take a look at your mouth.
Do colas really dissolve the tooth? Does a tooth in a glass of Coke really dissolve the...
Absolutely. Coca-Cola contains phosphoric acid. Acid, as you know, will dissolve anything organic.
Okay.
It will dissolve. It will dissolve the enamel completely.
So, Coke is bad?
Coke is bad.
Okay. And how do you choose a good toothbrush?
The new technology of brushes is no more linear movements, no more rotary movements, but ultrasonic vibrations. And there are two in the market that are particularly very, very good. One is one made by Philips, called the Philips Sonic Care. And the other one is made by Braun, similar brush. I personally prefer the Philips brushes, and I swear by it. I've been using one for the last 2 years, and I've had no problems whatsoever.
Okay. And how do you choose good floss? What are the different types?
Well, there are two kinds of floss, waxed and unwaxed.
Right.
I always claim the waxed floss smears, while the unwaxed floss cleans.
Okay. And what is the difference technically between the two?
The wax floss is just smoother. If you've got, you know, teeth with tight contacts, it sort of slips in nicely and slips out nicely.
Right.
While the unwaxed floss is a good cleansing tool, because when it goes in, it is not abrasive, but it is a little rougher than the wax floss, and it will do a better job of cleaning the tooth, the intersurfaces.
Okay. So that's a lot of information. And if people want to get in touch with you, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, they can look me up on the net. I have a website under the name of DRJAGDISH, Rohira. And I have a website with that. And on all the contact information is on that website. They can get in touch with me through that.
Okay. Great, Dr. Rohira. And thank you for your time. And thank you for giving us all those valuable tips. I hope we keep our teeth for a long time.
Thank you very much, Karami, for having me over. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Rohira, that's going to keep my teeth healthy and strong for long. And a question for you, Dr. Rohira. What did the tooth say to the departing dentist? Fill me in when you get back. Okay, I couldn't resist with that. But next up is Emma Sharif. As I mentioned, a comedian with a rather satirical view on fitness. Emma is known well on the Mumbai and Bangalore circuit.
Health and fitness is indeed a very important part of my lifestyle. I'm a stand-up comedian. I love my job. I just get paid for being a smartass, which I would be anyway.
So where do you think fitness is moving towards, you know, in this city, in Bangalore, and in other parts of India?
See, we are living in India, a country which is not exactly the healthiest country in the world. I mean, I couldn't help but notice that people have it all wrong when it comes to healthcare. People are very misinformed here. I mean, we have more than a billion people, and yet what kind of Olympic medal track record do we have? Pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. Especially in a big metropolitan city like Bangalore, standards of health and fitness I see are abysmally low. This is, after all, Pub City. People say that like it's something to be proud of. Pub City. Ladies, please do come to our pubs, have no fear. The guys here won't slip a roofie in your drink.
Not because they don't want to, it's because we have 11 o'clock deadline and the police will close the place down before the guy even has a chance to do it. Because you see, that is the job of the police. Terrorists can wait. Sending white collar workers to bed early is more important. And ladies, you can easily outrun a Bangalore man. Because over here in Pub City, interest in sports means watching IPL in a pub over a pitcher of beer and deep fried snacks. The only vitamin C the people consume here comes from the lemon after the tequila shot. High protein diet means eating an extra burger at McDonald's. And the only leaves in the diet are tobacco and weed. And relax, a Bangalore guy won't kick you like King Leonidas in 300 yelling, "This is Bangalore!" A Bangalore guy can't get his leg up so high, his beer belly will get in the way.
So where do you think we are going wrong?
Where we are going wrong is we need to create this culture of health and fitness. Look at the Americans, for instance. They are the number one country when it comes to Olympic gold medals. We always have America, China and Russia in the top three. Because this country, their culture, they place a premium on health and fitness. They have mandatory sports and fitness education programs in school. And it's also a lot to do with marketing. They have taken yoga and they're reaping the benefits. When we are the country who discovered yoga, and unfortunately we are lagging behind.
But we must be good, you know, a billion in population. I mean, we must be having some health and fitness happening over there.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's also a question of how you market it, you know. You see this show on Discovery Travel and Living called Namaste Yoga, where you have three unbelievably hot women doing yoga poses. That's what I love about Americans, man. Marketing, they're all about marketing. They have three unbelievably hot women teaching them yoga. What do we have? Baba Ramdev.
So do you think if Baba Ramdev gets a few models, it's going to help in propagating yoga?
I think it would. I mean, they should just come figure out a way to market it better, you know, appeal to the youth, health and fitness. Yeah.
So what do you think the socioeconomic structure, how does that play a role in healthcare and when it comes to individuals?
See, we are all social animals, and it's unfortunate that socialization all over the world has been designed around substance abuse. I mean, the only way young people seem to meet each other these days is over drinks or in office smoke breaks. That is just how society is. I mean, you want to talk to a pretty lady at a bar, you buy her a drink. That's just how it goes. You don't call the waiter and say, "Hey, you see that lady over there? Send her a carrot, my compliments." That's not gonna happen. But surely there are better lifestyle choices you can make as an individual. I mean, what is wrong with people? You should learn to respect yourself and respect your body. The human body is like a machine. Maintain it well, put the right things into it. Don't fill yourself with processed, artificially colored, high-calorie, high-fructose, preservative-laden, plastic-wrapped, chemical garbage that passes off as food these days. Take time out to eat a good meal. Everybody seems to be eating out of styrofoam, plastic, or cardboard containers these days. Does anybody even eat a nice home-cooked meal anymore? Fast food chains are out to make money, not to nourish you. Remember that.
Okay, so, but if people are busy, people have such tight schedules, you get out in the morning and you don't come out and come back until late at night. So how do you motivate yourself to like keep fit?
No time. That is the excuse most people use. Let me tell you something. If you do not take the time out to exercise, eat well and sleep well, you will die 10 years earlier. So you're not exactly making any savings in time. You see, the most messed up part is people don't appreciate it when someone tries to lead a healthy life. People who work out and follow a diet, others call them things like insecure and socially awkward, overachievers. I'll tell you what, just don't listen to those people and their stupid, uninformed opinions. Do what you like to do. Don't let people's low standards get in the way of you leading a healthy lifestyle. You see, the problem is people who do not appreciate a healthy lifestyle, they sort of put up this glass wall between themselves and the people they idolize for being in perfect shape. They just stare at posters of fitness icons like Bruce Lee and Arnold Schwarzenegger, secretly wishing inside that they were like them, and maybe even resolve to take steps to become like them. But they will never get off their lazy behinds and do what is necessary. They just stare and wish and spend their entire life staring and wishing, and they never get beyond that. They spend their entire pathetic lives looking average and mediocre, and this mediocrity will take them to an early grave. So basically, there are two categories of people on earth.
The people in the posters living the dream and the losers looking at the posters thinking, we can never be like them. My friend, if you're listening to this, you do not have to belong to the latter category. You have it in you to be the person in the poster, to be the performer, not the spectator. And I say, good health is the most honest asset one can have. Money, you can steal it. Fancy car, you can borrow someone else's and say it's yours. Clothes, you can wear your roommates and say they're your clothes. But a good body, you cannot buy it, you cannot borrow it, you cannot steal it. You have to work hard to get it. No other way, no shortcuts. Welcome to 2012. We have the means for it, we have the methods for it, we have the knowledge for it. Only one thing stands between you and your dream to attain the perfect body. You need to have the willingness for it. The only thing stopping you is your own lack of belief in yourself. So make a decision. What do you want to be? A chiseled Greek statue-like icon of physical perfection who will turn heads on the street? Or a fat, ugly, hairy, average slob that nobody cares about? If you think you can't do it, then stop wasting your time, turn this off, and go spend the rest of your day smoking, drinking, and growing fat and ugly. But if you believe in yourself and think you can do it, keep listening.
So what inspires you to stay fit?
It wasn't inspiration that started it. It was more of a push. You see, I was a young boy, and my father walked into my room, and he caught me doing what most young boys do. He caught me standing on my head. I was 6 years old. So he asked me to get down from the bed. I was standing on my head, and he said, look, go look at your face in the mirror. You see the blood rushing in your face? I saw my face was all red, and you know, that's good that you're getting some exercise. That was when I heard the word for the first time in my life, exercise. And then I started exercising. My father, I mean, I was a child of the 80s. My toys were a football, a bicycle, and roller skates, not iPads and PSPs. You know, I was more of an outdoor kid. We didn't have Facebook and internet. So it was more of an outdoor life, good old days. So I spent my days playing football, cricket. I've tried my hand at almost all kinds of sports.
Okay. So what's your fitness philosophy?
Okay. Right off the bat, let me make it clear. I'm a bit old-fashioned when it comes to health and fitness. There are a few old, tried and tested methods that everyone universally acknowledges as true and effective. See, these days in magazines and websites, you see ridiculous claims about magic sauna pads and ab machines and health drinks, all garbage. They are just marketing strategies designed to convince you that there is an easier method. Take it from me, there is no easier method, so stop searching for it. I believe the old school no pain, no gain philosophy, so if you're looking for shortcuts, stop wasting your time, there are none. Okay, the first tip I'd like to give you is sleep well. Sleep for a good 8 hours a day. When Aamir Khan was trying to get that super ripped body he had for the movie Gajini, he slept for no less than 8 hours a day. In fact, I'll even go far enough to say, miss your workout if you have to, but do not compromise on sleep. And we've all been in this situation after a week long of work. If you're stressed, just resist the temptation to drown your sorrows in alcohol. Instead, go to bed early, wake up early in the mornings without a hangover, and have a nice, good workout. Trust me, you'll find it a million times more rewarding than boozing. You'll feel awesome, you'll feel confident, and you'll feel like such a winner. And the people who inspire me to stay fit, there's my cousin DJ Hussein. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a well-known DJ in Bangalore. He introduced me to weightlifting. So I took to bodybuilding, inspired, of course, by, you know who it is, Arnold Schwarzenegger. His documentary, Pumping Iron, is a must-watch. I strongly recommend it. So to get a good body, you have to work on muscle, fat, and bone. Mind and body go together. If you lead a sedentary lifestyle, your brain just assumes that you're not the kind who's into physical activity, and therefore your muscles don't develop, and fat doesn't burn, and your bones don't become dense. But if you lift weights every day, your body realizes that you do indeed need strength to do the kind of work you're doing, and hence the body responds to the stimulus by becoming stronger. For example, let's say if you're a machinist in a factory and your job involves operating a tight lever with your arms all day long, pulling that lever all day, and you do it every day, then your arms will become strong in response to that. Other parts of your body might stay the same. Now, bodybuilding is that art and science of developing all the muscles of the body in a controlled manner.
evenly throughout so that you have a good all-round musculature. The body should be symmetrical. It shouldn't be like one arm is bigger than the other. That's not good. And the body should not be out of proportion. For example, it would look really odd if you have a big barrel chest and tiny arms hanging in the side. So avoid that. Have an all-round development.
So some practical advice on how to go about it. I mean, that's a lot of good wishful thinking.
Yeah, it all comes down to what do I have to do next to get there. So what you do is, the way I work out, I focus on six major muscle groups: shoulders, biceps, triceps, legs, back, and chest. I work on just one muscle group every day for around 40 minutes to 50 minutes, less than that, not more than that. Taking a day off every fourth day. Apart from that, I also work on minor muscle groups, abdomens, calves, and forearms. These I do every day for a couple of minutes in between the main muscle group workouts. And remember this, do not overexert yourself. You may get inspired looking at bodybuilders like Dorian Yates and Ronnie Coleman, but remember, these people are professionals. Do not attempt to lift the kind of weights they lift. Start off light, then gradually move on to bigger weights.
And anybody else who inspires you?
Yeah, when all is said and done, I feel that these professional bodybuilders like Ronnie Coleman and Arnold Schwarzenegger, their bodies are overkill. I mean, it takes a lot of effort to maintain that kind of body. You have to eat a lot of high-protein meals to feed all that muscle. So recently, I've started leaning towards the methods and philosophies of another very well-known fitness icon, Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee is a good case for the importance of cardio. Before you lift weights, make sure you do stretches and cardio. But before you even start exercising, make sure you eat something about 20 to 30 minutes before the exercise. I usually drink two raw eggs mixed with a cup of milk, or have two bananas with a cup of milk. Even a large glass of fruit juice will do. If you don't do this, you won't have the energy to work out, and your body will start cannibalizing itself for nutrients, and that leads to muscular shrinkage. And the first thing I do when I start exercising is stretching. Stretch those muscles and tendons, stretch them well so you don't get cramps or ligament tears while handling weights. Then I do the abdomen exercises. Two kinds of exercises, 50 reps each, one for the sides and one for the front. Try different ones every day, keep it fresh. And then I start my cardio. You see, there are two kinds of exercises, aerobic and anaerobic. Aerobics, also sometimes known as cardio, are exercises which you can do over a prolonged period of time. They increase your rate of respiration and heartbeat. Examples are low-intensity exercises like walking, jogging, dancing. I think you can sustain this activity for at least 10 to 15 minutes for an average person. Now, anaerobic exercises are those that are very intense and you can't do them for very long. For example, lifting a 15 kilo dumbbell, you may be able to do it for like 10 or 15 reps, that is less than a minute, and you have to stop. Your body can't take in oxygen at such a rapid rate, and you have to stop and recuperate, hence the name anaerobic. You can only perform anaerobic exercises in short bursts, and you have to stop to get a breather. Anaerobic exercises, aerobic exercises, and diet, they all contribute towards losing fat. There is no point having six-pack abs if you have a layer of fat covering them. You may say you have them, but you can't see them. Before performing anaerobic exercises, it is important that you do a little fat, sugar, and oil. Examples of food you must avoid are ice cream, chocolates, anything with a lot of sugar, colas and sugary drinks, fried snacks and kebabs, instant noodles, fast food chain, junk food, and bakery items made using white flour. Instead, eat things like vegetables, roasted lean meats, brown bread, wheat chapatis, beans, etc. Make healthy eating choices. In the Indian scenario, in the mornings, say instead of eating a masala dosa, which has a lot of oil and carbs, why not choose a rava idli, which has a lot of fiber, and since it's cooked by steaming, it retains all the nutrients. And if you step out for lunch in your office food court, instead of going for Kentucky fattening chicken or McDonald's, why not eat a good South Indian meal? And it's light on the stomach, light on the wallet, light on the environment, and you won't feel drowsy in the afternoon. And I don't know whether you have noticed this, if you walked into KFC, they have this notice board put up that says, "This store is under camera surveillance." Relax, people. It's just a restaurant, not a Swiss bank. You really think people would walk in there with assault rifles and bulletproof vests, risk life and limb just to steal some fatty chicken? Besides, there's an easier way to kill yourself at KFC. Eat the chicken. But you know what? Forget what you learned in schools. There is nothing wrong in eating between meals. In fact, it is recommended that you eat between meals. Keep having healthy snacks in between, like fruits, dry fruit, etc. Healthy snacks. I repeat, healthy snacks, just to keep that metabolism running. And throughout the day, just keep making healthy choices. Like when you're working, don't just sit there for hours and hours in front of the computer screen. Keep a reminder in your phone if you have to. Get up at least once an hour, walk around the office for like 5 minutes and come back, or else you'll suffer from spinal injuries. So, and do not take the elevator, take the stairs when you can. And just have a healthy, positive outlook at life. Don't just huff and puff your way up the stairs. Leap across those stairs like a ninja.
And what do you do if you get bored from it all? Because one of the things that fitness people and people who want to get fit suffer from the most is gym boredom.
Gym boredom, yes. Things can get a little lonely at the gym, because one problem, like I said, in an Indian scenario, not many people are into health and fitness. They would rather spend their days smoking and drinking at pubs. And you see,
do you notice how much we kind of complain about lack of fitness facilities by the government, but the fitness facilities that are provided are all usually empty?
What kind of facilities do you need? You can get running shoes and just run outside on the streets.
But if you see some of the stadiums, and if you see there are courts, there are stadiums, but many times you go there and the whole place is empty. There aren't enough people. There probably are people playing badminton in the park, but there won't be people willing to take a membership to play badminton in a court.
Well, we can't let that become an excuse now, can we? We have to improvise, try and create our own infrastructure. Life comes only once in a lifetime. You can't blame the government and just grow fat and unhealthy because of that. Okay. So you have to find a way to work around that. And since you mentioned boredom from gym boredom, I would say it is good to stick to an exercise routine and do it regularly, but just don't overdo it. It is recommended that you have some kind of variety in your fitness activities. For example, if you're going to the gym, if you're on your way to the gym and you run into a group of friends who are on their way to, I don't know, play football, and they invite you, don't turn down the invite saying that you have to go to the gym. Skip the gym for the day. Just skip the gym and play football instead. That is also a healthy activity. Otherwise, your exercise routine will get repetitive. Try every sport there is. Try trekking, football, cricket, basketball, swimming, rugby, whatever you get. Play team sports. An added benefit is that you will network with the right people, like-minded people who are also into health and fitness. Would you rather hang out with people who sit in a sofa all day and drink beers? Have a good social life, have good friends with good habits. It's okay to party and indulge yourself occasionally, but just don't overdo it. Moderation is the key word. Stress can make you fat and unhealthy. Stress produces the stress hormone cortisol, which can make you fat despite your best efforts at staying fit. You see, living healthy is not easy, but the rewards will far outweigh the effort. I have suffered a lot. I have broken my back for the sake of health. Not the expression, I have literally broken my back by lifting weights that were too heavy. All this effort I have put in, all the sweat and blood, sometimes I ask myself, is it worth it? But then I look at myself in the mirror and I get the answer. Hell yeah, it is.
Awesome, Ahmed. What I realize is fitness is no laughing matter.
You can say that again.
Mr. Garg, Executive Director of Jindal Aluminium Limited and the Administrative Health Head of Jindal, tells us a little bit about the Jindal Nature Cure Clinic. Thanks. Hello and welcome to the show. I am with Mr. Garg, who is the executive director of both Jindal Aluminium Limited and the Jindal Nature Cure Center. So I began by asking him a little bit about this amazing center, which has been working for more than 30 years and helping patients from all over the world. So Mr. Garg, tell us something about the center.
This Nature Cure Institute, the name was Institute of Naturopathy and Yogic Sciences. And since last 5 years, it has been renamed as Jindal Nature Cure Center, Jindal Nature Cure Institute. This was established in 1978, and with a small beginning, we had only about 100 beds. Today, the institute has about 400 beds, out of which about 50% are in highly subsidized, and remaining we charge reasonably, which compensate the losses which we suffered in the economy accommodations. The institute provides treatment only by way of nature cure, and it's pure nature cure. We do not follow here even Ayurveda or Unani or any other therapy. But the diagnosis is done by the all most modern way, like endoscopy, x-ray, blood test, urine test, all type of tests are done here, and the latest equipments are available for the diagnosis. But treatments are strictly based on nature cure, yoga, physiotherapy, acupuncture, and diet control.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about, I understand this center is spread over a very large area. It's almost a couple of, some 80, 90 acres. And you also have different types of, you grow your own vegetables, and you have your own, it's almost self-sustaining. There is very little dependence on outside, and also for energy and heat, you are using solar power and so on. So tell us a little bit about how you have been managing, and how you have started and created this organic kind of farms, which result in, I think, better healthcare for the patients.
Yeah, this institute is spread over in an area about 90 acres. We have the construction area is only within 2 acres, spread over a period of 20 acres, and remaining area is being used for growing vegetables and fruits, which is consumed by the patients. Almost entire requirement of the vegetables and entire requirement of the vegetables is of the institute is met from the farm, which is all the vegetables are grown organically. We do not use any pesticides or any urea. Institute is fully self-dependent for the purpose of the vegetables, and we have created a lot of greenery here. There is a 3 kilometer walking track, 2 kilometer is a pakka walking track, and 1 kilometer is a mud walking track. There is a lake also, which is spread over in about 60 acre, very adjacent to the institute, which gives it a very natural atmosphere.
Okay. So one thing which I wanted to know is that what are the kind of, I understand you try to differentiate this from a typical spa. This is not a typical, this is really a hospital where people come to treat serious and chronic cases. In fact, as I understand, you almost discourage people coming here purely for weight loss or things like that. You really want to devote your energy to disease management and cure.
Yes, it is true. We do not admit patients just for weight reduction or relaxation. It is absolutely not a spa. It is a nature cure hospital. This is the first of its kind in India, which was established by our founder, Dr. S.R. Jindal. Since his early age, since the age of 15, Dr. Jindal has great faith in naturopathy due to his personal experience. The institute is the outcome of his sincere efforts for popularizing naturopathy in India, which was totally forgotten. It is only because of him the Nature Cure has earned some name and some reputation in India. Otherwise, it was totally an ignored therapy. At the time of admission, we do all the types of diagnosis of the patients, and based on that, the Nature Cure treatments are given. we have two treatment sections, one for ladies, one for other for gents. The basic natural cure treatments are enema, hip baths, different type of hip baths, the cold hip bath, neutral hip bath, hot hip bath, and various massages, colon therapy, mud bath, banana leaf bath, and so on. Like there are nearly about 50 types of treatments are there, which are given to the patients. And we after 2 days, the patient is kept on fast depending upon the disease, and which is decided by the doctors. The fasting period may be 5 days, 7 days, and even more. Many patients, they remain on fast even for 20 days, even 25 days on their own. The patient face problem during first 2 days, and thereafter they enjoy the benefit of fasting. One thing, let me tell you that our fasting and starvation is totally different. Fasting means that it is fast on liquids. It cleans the system from inside. First, we spend about 5 to 7 days time in cleaning the toxins from the body, which makes the body very light and the person feels highly rejuvenated.
So which are the major diseases which people you see people coming to you? Has it changed over time? You've seen a lot of quite a few years. We talk about this new age of consumerism and more of automation and television, where people are probably exercising this. So has over the years has the kind of disease structure which people have come to you for changed, or has it increased or decreased? What have been the trends that you have been seeing?
We treat all the major diseases except the cardiac problem and cancer problem. Cancer, earlier we were totally not admitting, but since last few months we are admitting patients, cancer patients, up to second stage, and we have achieved successful results. Many cancer patients have been treated very successfully up to second stage, but naturopathy has its own limitation. Beyond second stage, we have not admitted the patients, and we have not even achieved the results.
So when you talk about results in cancer, what do you exactly define as a result? Is the patient free from cancer? Will he live the normal span of life, or are we talking about still a reduced span? Because in cancer, 5 years is considered a successful. If a person survives 5 years after first detection, it is considered a success.
Yeah, up to second stage, we have cured successfully, and as per our doctors, they will be leading their normal life only. The life will not be reduced, provided they follow the naturopathy in strict sense even after leaving the institute, which is more important. And apart from this, many patients are coming diabetic patients. The Nature Cure provides very good treatment for diabetic. Even the patient dependent upon penicillin have achieved very good results. The penicillin-dependent patients, after leaving the institute, have led a normal life even without the medicine. They are not required to take medicine, tablets, or any penicillin, and they can lead a normal life. But the Nature Cure is a way of life. It is not a miracle. If you follow naturopathy, you can live life normally till you breathe your last.
So, but the rules and regulations and the structure and the way of life that you teach over here, is it possible to follow that in a regular working environment of today? Is that possible?
Yes, I know that it is not possible to follow 100%. But even if the patient follow even to the extent of 50%, he can maintain his life very well till he breathes his last.
So just tell me something for a regular, relatively healthy individual of today. What are the points that he should do to keep healthy?
See, the basic thing is that any person should remain close with nature, should get up early, drink 2 to 3 glasses of waters, and after attending nature's call, should do exercise for about half an hour or do some walking. And the main things are that any person should take food on time. He should drink about 2 to 3 liters of water in a day. If this and sleep on time, if these basic things are followed, a person can lead the healthy life in a natural way.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Garg. It was a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure.
And after Mr. Garg, Dr. Babina, the head doctor at the Jindal Nature Cure Clinic, tells us what really is Nature Cure and how it works.
So naturopathy treatments are there from time immemorial, from the Vedic times itself. But in Jindal, what we have done is we have modified and upgraded all the types of treatments. So first I will explain to you what is naturopathy. So naturopathy is an art and science of healthy living and a drugless system of healing which does not imply any kind of medicine. Because whatever treatments we are giving here, all the treatments are only external treatments. We don't give any internal treatments at all. And then the fundamental difference, what I want to tell with naturopathy and other system of medicine, is that, see, when you go for allopathy or any other system of medicine for any type of disease, they will just concentrate only on the part you're complaining of. Suppose if you go to allopath doctor complaining of stomach pain, their whole concentration will be only on that stomach region. But whereas when patients come to naturopathy, we consider the whole body as a single entity. That means if one cell is diseased in your body, that means the whole body is diseased. So what we believe in naturopathy is that accumulation of toxins is the root cause for all diseases, and elimination of the toxins is the cure. So what basically we try to do in naturopathy is that actually we believe that our body is made up of five great elements, or panch mahabhutas, what we call it as. That is the earth, water, air, fire and space. So whenever there is any imbalance in any of these panch mahabhutas, that leads to different types of diseases. So when the patients come to us for naturopathy, we take the detailed examination, detailed history, lab investigations, and even the X-ray, CT scan, whatever is required for the patient's condition, we get all the diagnosis done. Mm-hmm. Because first, before we start with any treatment, the diagnosis part is very important. So after the diagnosis, then we put them on different types of therapies, like earth. Like as I told you, our body is made up of five great elements. So earth is also one of the component. So for earth, we give different type of treatments like mud pack, eye pack, full mud bath we give. And even if any of the part or area is affected, we try to give mud packs to that particular area. And next is the water. Water, we have got different types of hydrotherapy treatments. So we have underwater massage, spinal bath, hip bath, and then deluxe hydro massage, like this various types of water massages we have here to treat the water imbalance. And then we have the air. So we teach pranayams and breathing techniques to balance the air component in the body. And then we have the space. So for the space, we put the patients on fasting. So fasting, when the patients do the fasting, a vacuum is created in their body. So this also creates the space, or akash, what we call it in our system. So we try to give naturopathy treatments in Jindal Nature Cure Institute. Okay. Because whatever it is, we don't give any oral or internal medications at all. Whatever treatment we are giving, it is all external treatment.
So what kind of results have you seen from these processes?
Yeah, we have got excellent results in naturopathy, especially for the diseases like diabetes, high blood pressure, arthritis, migraine, sinusitis, allergic rhinitis, osteoarthritis, lumbar spondylosis, cervical spondylosis. All these problems, all these diseases, they get very well controlled in naturopathy. See, many people have the intention that they have diabetes. So they come and stay with us for 15 or 21 days, absolutely without their insulin or without their oral diabetic medications, their blood test reports become normal. What they think is that, okay, I've gone to Jindal, stayed there for 15 to 21 days, I'm out of my disease. But it is not like that. See, always we say that naturopathy is a way of life. So whatever the patient has learnt over here, that is different type of diet, exercises, yoga, and different types of packs, what they can follow it at home. So if they follow all these things, then definitely they can control the disease 100%. Naturopathy, it's not a magic, it's a way of life. So whatever the patient has learnt over here, he should try to inculcate the same habits once he gets back home. Only then he can control the disease completely.
Are there any interesting cases that come to your mind which really kind of surprised you as well as the patient from
Definitely. We had a patient with Parkinsonism, because actually she was also a doctor from Delhi, and when she came in, her condition was very bad, but she was smart enough to come in the initial stage to us so that she could control the disease wherever it is. So now, since last 5 to 6 years, she has been coming here regularly, but her Parkinson's symptoms are much under control. And same way, even one patient from Pakistan, even she also had come here with the initial stages. I'm telling you that naturopathy is not everything. We cannot cure all the diseases, but Parkinsonism in the initial cases, we have got very good relief. And same with the rheumatoid arthritis also. The patient who come here with the rheumatoid arthritis initial stages, they respond very well. And even the patients who are having insulin dependent diabetes, they are on insulin and they need to come and stay with us for minimum 21 to 30 days. Because initially, gradually, we have to taper the insulin, because we can't stop the insulin all of a sudden. We have to taper it gradually. So we have to gradually taper the insulin, and along with that, we have to taper the oral medications that also. So when both the things are tapered, and then we give them various type of naturopathy diet and treatments, which helps them to balance their blood sugar level without any external medications. And then completely we observe them for the last 1 week without any oral medications or with the insulin dependent. So insulin dependent cases, we have seen a lot of good relief. And then many patients come to us every year just to detox the system, so that their internal system is detoxed and rejuvenated and the whole system can function in a much efficient way.
Okay, so one of the things which, just to close, I love to ask all the doctors and all the healthcare experts who come on the show is, what do you do to stay healthy? What a lot of times we are prescribing things, but I like to talk about your daily day. What kind of since you are following a regular life. Even though you are here, so what do you do to keep yourself healthy?
Yeah, many people have that common notion that once they come to Jindal, they are put on fasting, so they cannot lead the same lifestyle after going back home. This is a common question. Definitely, when the patients are here, we put the patients on fasting, because fasting is a panacea for health. Because we put the patients on fasting to detox their system and rejuvenate. See, now like the kitchen dustbin is there, you have all the filth in it, and whatever fresh fruits or vegetables you put in it, everything gets rotten. So same thing happens with the internal system as well. As long as your internal system is cleansed and healthy, any disease or any bacteria can enter and thrive in your system. So in order to cleanse it, we put the patient on the detoxification diet when the patients are in Jindal. But definitely after going back home, it is not that easy to follow all the things what you have been following here. So after going back home, what you can do is, as soon as you get up in the morning, you can drink at least 2 to 3 glasses of water, followed with a glass of lime juice with honey. And if the patient is diabetic, instead of honey, the plain lime juice can be taken, or buttermilk with methi can be taken. And then for the breakfast, any light breakfast which is free of oil or ghee. No puris, parathas. You can have idli, upma, oats, or anything light. The best thing would be to break your fast, that is the breakfast, what we call it as, to break your fast with the fruits and a glass of skimmed milk will be better. And then again, between your breakfast and lunch, you can have a glass of vegetable juice. Carrot, beetroot, tomato, cucumber, whatever it is. Minimum 3 types of vegetables you can blend together and take a glass of vegetable juice. And for the lunch, you can have either 2 chapatis or 1 cup of brown rice, that is the unpolished rice, and then 100 grams of leafy vegetables, 100 grams of boiled vegetables, and then 1/2 cup of dal for the protein requirement, and then either soup or buttermilk. And again in the evening, that is between your lunch and dinner, you can have a glass of seasonal fresh fruit juice or tender coconut water. Because you have to take something every 2 hours to pep up your metabolism. And again for the dinner, as a maintenance diet, you can have 3 times cooked food, like chapati, rice, whatever it is you have taken in the lunch, same thing can be taken for the dinner. And 3 times in the week, you can take 100 grams of raw salads, 50 grams of sprouts, 2 to 3 seasonal fruits, and then either soup or buttermilk. But if you want to reduce further after going back home, it's better if you cut your carbohydrates for the dinner. You can just have only 2 to 3 types of seasonal fruits, and then 100 grams of raw salads, 50 grams of sprouts, and then a bowl of soup or buttermilk can be taken.
And what is this notion of, that people have that if you're vegetarian, you are deficient in certain minerals because you have to be non-vegetarian? Is it true?
It is not necessary, but definitely because some of the vitamins like vitamin B12 and all that, the vegetarians lack it. So now anyways, vitamin B12 supplements are there that can be taken only in one or two vitamins, until unless it really causes problem. Because especially this vitamin deficiency will come because nobody is eating the raw food. Because most of the vitamins like vitamin B complex and vitamin C, once you boil them or heat them, they get completely destroyed. But whereas when you take it in the raw form, in the form of salads and sprouts, then definitely all your vitamins will be intact.
Thank you, Dr. Bhavina.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Bhavina. That was a lot of good health advice. I'm feeling healthy already. And as always, Health Tips is brought to you by Atharva Life Sciences Consulting, the leading life sciences market research consulting firm. Want to know more about biotech or pharma or agriculture or fisheries? Talk to the leaders. Talk to Atharva Life Sciences Consulting. They deliver the best market research reports available. To know more, go to www.atharvalife.com. That's ATHARVALIFE.com. Or call +91 80 2353 0016. See you next time. Stay healthy. Keep moving.